Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 242 for October 21st, 2019. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And my name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com. And today we will be discussing the 317th weekly report. So you can just go to timingresearch.com/reports to get access to that there. And you can access that either in web or PDF form. Today I have arranged for AJ Brown and Jim Kenny to be here. Also, Brian Klindworth was supposed to be here, but he's going to be on tomorrow's Analyze Your Trade show instead. So Jim will be moderating, and I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, thank you, David. And yeah, again, this is Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com. And AJ Brown is with us, so we're very fortunate for that.
Hi, everybody.
Yep. So AJ, before we get started, for the people who are not aware, a little bit about yourself, your background, and what's going on at TradingTrainer.com.
Well, one question I actually have for David as I was listening to the intro is, how are we on episode 242, but we're on the 317th weekly report? We must have been starting with the weekly reports before we started with our episodes.
Oh, yeah. I started the reports about a year before I started the show. I wasn't even originally. I just started it as an experiment. To survey traders each week and get some
very cool
info.
Very cool.
And then actually too, and I still publish the reports even on weeks that we don't do the show. So every Sunday for the last 317 Sundays, I've published the report.
Wow. I'll tell you, this show has become kind of a mainstay, like people expect it. So I'm glad to be part of it. Yeah, my name is AJ Brown. I have a company called Trading Trainer that we started back in 2003, teaching full-time option traders. And then in 2007, we also started to include a program that now has kind of outshined the full-time option trader program, which is we focus a lot on premium selling for investors. So we focus on option investing, but doing it in a way that the everyday investor versus a trader could be focused on. I've been trading myself since 1997. And I have been trading full time since 2002. And I guess my big claim to fame, or what I like to be known most for, is in parallel to running the company Trading Trainer, I run a non-for-profit education company where we focus on teaching inner city kids how to take care of their finances and how to even trade into the markets. And we've partnered with the CBOE for over close to 15 years now, offering it to the inner city kids in Southside Chicago. Last year, we graduated over 170 students from our program. So I'm pretty proud of what we do for raising the bar on financial education, even with kids that otherwise don't get much visibility. They fall through the cracks.
That's excellent, because kids definitely need to learn more about this and less about Fortnite, you know?
Right. Or gangbanging.
Right. Well, anyway, we have our standard question, so let's hit them. The first one is from this week's opening, which it looks like it opened at around 29.96 on the S&P. Mm-hmm. Where do you think that the market might be closing by the end of the week?
Well, we're banging up against another level of resistance that we have tested three times now. We've been in this sideways channel pretty much since the end of what we call the Trump rally at the end of 2017, beginning of 2018. So, you know, on the short time frame of 1 week, if history continues to repeat itself, we could kind of stay up in this area. But I would say that we're going to be a little bit on the downside, just cresting at the top here this week and heading on our way down by the end of the week.
Okay, so by the end of the week, you think it might be a little bit lower than it is now, or around this area?
Around this area, but definitely lower.
Gotcha. Okay, and then the second question is always, what's your confidence level in this type of call?
So for instance, if I had a confidence of 0 to 10, where 10 would be I'm extremely confident, 0 is I have no clue, I would actually rate myself around a 4 or a 5. Again, I've seen where we can kind of meander and hang out at these levels of resistance where there could be possibly some distribution happening where we want to stay up at this level until all the market movers get rid of their positions. So 4 or 5 is my confidence that we'll be lower. And I don't think that we're going to be crazy amounts lower by the the end of the week, just a small amount lower.
Yeah, it's hard to be tremendously negative because the market has been bid up every time it's dropped, and the mm-hmm. moving averages like the 50 and the 200 day are inverted and going to the upside. Mm-hmm. And now today we come in and we definitely see a bid underneath the transportation average and again on the Russell, which, you know, have been lagging. But today they certainly are on their bicycle. And if that's going to be a precursor to more activity, that's a pretty good underpinning. With regards to anything coming up this week that you're looking at that might be, you know, something that, you know, might affect what's going on?
Actually, this seems like it's going to be a fairly quiet week, at least when it comes to economic news. This is the week where, from the economic news perspective, they give out a lot of housing data. But really, that has not been the focus of the markets for quite a while now. The markets are more interested in what's coming out of Twitter than is coming out of any of the actual hard numbers that get reported every week or every month. I've personally started to focus again. I focus on equity options. So we're talking about index stocks and ETFs, the options that are written against those. And there's three different parameters that we profit on. We either profit on changes of implied volatility, of course, changes in the underlying symbol direction, what the price is compared to the strike price of the option we're interested in. And finally, on the fact that options are wasting assets, the premium at expiration is always zero. And that's the most reliable, right? Because time passing by is what affects the theta decay of an option price. And really, that's what we're trading in our groups, because that's the most consistent. So coming back to your actual question, nothing is really focusing on me besides, you know, maybe being interested in what the next tweet is going to be. But even those, I mean, I remember in the beginning of like 2017, every Twitter rant was greeted with a huge Wall Street change. Now almost Wall Street's become immune to even the most craziest Twitter responses. So nothing, I think, surprises anybody anymore. We're all just in kind of this wait and see type approach. So I don't see anything this upcoming week that's going to alert me to much, but you never know. So you always have to be on your toes.
With regards to the VIX, you're following the VIX, and do you have any opinion or any kind of insight into what you're seeing on the VIX?
So we do follow the VIX. In fact, the VIX, you know, it oscillates quite a nice amount, and it's been heavier. So again, what I was mentioning, you know, for the longest time, the VIX was at an extremely low level, down at 12s, 11s, 10s, things that we hadn't seen for years. Now, for the last bit, it's been, you know, hanging around between 14 and 20. The beautiful part about that, again, is if you're trading theta decay like we are predominantly, no matter what the VIX is at expiration, those options are going to be worth nothing, right? The premium is going to be zero. So with higher VIX ratings, which through correlation kind of affects pretty much all the different option chains out there, you can get a higher premium when you write or short to open, sell to open, short your symbols, and then, you know, it's still going to expire at zero. So we like that the VIX is higher. We like that it's in the range 14 to 20 because that just means higher premiums from us. And that's pretty much all the credibility we're giving to the VIX. You know, VIX is a measurement of basically the implied volatility of the S&P 500. It's not historical volatility. It's what people think is coming. And, you know, if you look at the statistics and you look at implied volatility numbers, you know, the fact is that it's wrong about 85% of the time, but it's what controls the option price. It's the buying and selling pressure of the option. So you can profit on it, but that's, we use it for just a measurement of what it is, not what it could be.
And my observation on the VIX has been that this 14 area here, mm-hmm. which was the former highs in July.
Correct.
And then that was tested in September, and then it's tested again right now. That combined with what you were saying, which is the resistance we're in right now, means I think it's a pretty incredible week we're at right here, because if we were to blow out 30-30 on the upside and the VIX dumped significantly under 14, it would add a lot of credence that the next leg on the upside has started you know, you wouldn't want to stand in front of it.
Yes. Or the other could be true, that we go the other direction.
Yeah, well, like I said, say, if it's going to hold, then yeah, the this area right here, it could be a rollover situation if we start seeing 15, 17 or something like that. There are some earnings coming out. Do you follow that, or are you strictly into the, just the technicals?
No, absolutely. The earnings season is beginning to start here, and we definitely could play the IV rush that gets into it and then the IV crush right after. What sort of earnings are you following?
Well, I mean, this week we've got some pretty big ones with Microsoft, Intel, Twitter, and Amazon, and the then technicals. Some of the industrial names more, or that say the link to China deal more, like Caterpillar and 3M. So, you know, I think there's going to be some interesting news coming out between now and Friday on these companies.
What I also like to look at is in the VIX is the each progressive high is a little bit lower. Like for instance, in August we were all the way up to 24, and then we came right back down to this level at 14. And then again in October we had maybe peaked around 21 as it for our close, and then back down to 14. I saw that again back in May as well, right? When we were using our low of about 12, we were popping up and then coming down lower. I wonder if that's a repeating pattern that we should be paying attention to.
Yeah, it seems as if when the VIX jumps to 20 or 25 this year, it's been an opportunity to buy the stock market. And then when it comes down into this range where we're in now, it's been an opportunity to sell. But again, if you knock on a door long enough, sometimes it comes down. With regards to the way, the background on, you know, how you, what's your methodology on how you come up with an idea?
Well, so for instance, what we're trying to do here in our premium selling program for investors is we're looking for those companies that are, or ETFs, for instance, but let's go from a stock perspective, those companies that tend to have investors that like the price to stay solid, not going up, not going down, not becoming unpredictable. Usually those ones that don't get the media attention, right? Giving out dividends, just reliably paying their investors for owning them. They're not looking for asset appreciation. And that's where we start with all of our strategies, as we look for those almost boring symbols that just continue to go sideways. And from there, we'll create a plan around just selling that theta decay premium. We don't want the media attention. We don't want the crazy moves up or down. Rather, we're just looking for it to stay within a range so that we can let time passing by give us that profit. And then we'll do some, you know, we might, instead of doing a covered call or a covered put, which is probably the most basic of those type of strategies, we might look to see how we could substitute the back month, the underlying symbol, with a back month option, create kind of a diagonal type outlook, and definitely legging in as part of our strategies. And so that's really how we would put together one of our plans. We would, of course, and something that a lot of folks don't focus on, is we would plan out the worst case scenario, in our case, perhaps a buy right or a short right. And with that worst case scenario, we would be able to determine for ourselves what would be the most amount of risk exposure this one trade or position would give us. And from that comes our position sizing. And a lot of folks don't focus on that. So I want to emphasize for the listeners today, the importance, and it's really not a exciting type of topic, but you don't know how many people, actually you probably do, who come to me and they say, you know what? I learned from a guru the other, 2 years ago, how to do vertical credit spreads. And the first 9 months, I was making 5 or 6% on all my trades. But then on that 10 month, the market went against me. And when the market went against me, not only did I lose all the gains I made in the first 9 months, I lost half of my portfolio. And immediately what that tells me is that the person wasn't doing good risk management, wasn't sizing their positions. Because if you're only exposing your portfolio to a certain amount of risk, then there's no way that can happen. You can't lose all of your gains, let alone half of the principal that you started with. So a lot of people don't focus on that, mainly because I think it's just not exciting. But make sure everybody has that in their plan, the correct how to do position sizing based on risk.
Yeah, a lot of it will come down to using too much leverage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that comes with the excitement of gains. You know, you shouldn't, increase your position size based on, how excited you are.
With regards to sectors, you say you're looking at deliberate moving, slower moving volatility wise. Any particular sector that you're finding that to be more true in?
Well, right now it seems like energies, companies like Devon Energy, Chevron, and also for a while there, we were looking a lot at airlines.
Mm-hmm.
We had United Airlines, JetBlue. At one point, we were also looking at Southwestern Airlines. These were all companies that just seemed to be in a sideways kind of calm. Everybody was just investing in them because they knew that they were had a solid footing for the next couple of years. And there was no, you know, volatility going on. Even with the craziness happening at Boeing, the airlines just kept going sideways. And so we've been selling premium on the airlines for the last year and just started selling a lot of premium against energy starting in this past summer.
Mm. Yeah, like a stock like Chevron has been volatile enough to give you some premiums because it's at a $15 trading range most of the year, but it hasn't broken out above 125 nor under 110. So it stayed within a parameter, and within the parameter, it was jumpy enough to give you some premium.
Exactly. Not only were the implied volatilities high, but that jumpy enough being able to stretch between about a $10 range allowed us to kind of leg into these positions where we could do our low end part when we're buying into positions or doing our bull call debit spreads or our bull put credit spreads at the low end, and then $10 higher, we'd be able to do our top end or sell our premium depending on what sort of strategy you're pulling off. So there's enough choppiness that we can take advantage of that small amount of underlying symbol price change to make it even better.
Yeah, because you can't do any option premium selling if it's a flatline stock. You need to have it bouncing around a little bit.
I would agree. In fact, the flatline stocks also worry us a little bit because we think that, you know, at this point, the market movers are starting to get us into kind of a springboard position. They're flatline because something's about to happen. That's the number one thing that can spoil a premium trade is a surprise movement in underlying symbol price that's outside of your expected range, right?
Mm. And if a stock is really flat, it really is saying that the buyers and the sellers are both waiting for something. And whatever they're waiting for occurs, it's going to be a lot of people taking, you know, people wanting to get in or out, and it creates that volume imbalance, which is essentially why markets make big moves, is obviously the order imbalance.
It becomes kind of like a powder keg. In fact, the longer that it's flatlining, the more powder they're adding to it, the more pressure into that pressure cooker, and any little, you know, little tinder that hits that powder keg, get it to move, right?
Now, one of the sectors you were mentioning is the airlines, and I'm kind of noticing on Delta, and I'm sure it's true of others, you got a very low PE ratio, you got a good dividend, and you got a stock that used to be at 63 that went all the way down to 45, and now you've got a stock that's trying to turn up with a pretty good-looking low put in recently at around 51 or so. Would that be something you'd do the covered call writing in if you, or would you be more looking at a put write or something like that?
I think that, again, looking for, the put write, I think that we'd be looking for a covered call type of position on Delta right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I forgot which guru had said something. It was on one of these multi-speaker events that I was part of. And he said something to the effect of, you know, we like to do our adjustments at times of peace, not at times of war. And what that made me think of is, you know, if you're sinking down or you're finding a bottom, that's the best time to be doing your covered call type strategies, right? Not your covered put type strategies. Your covered put type strategies, you've already missed the opportunity. You're now in a point where you want to see where it bottoms and then start the process of selling premium to the covered call side.
Yeah, that Leon Cooperman was on CNBC, and he was saying he had three stocks that he has a 5% of his portfolio position in. Cigna was one, Google was the other, and United Airlines was another. And they came out and did great on their earnings report. And the stock has gone from 80 up towards 91 here today. So that sector of the airline seems to definitely be trying to get going. And the P/E ratios on them are very low.
Yes.
So they're not expensive by the valuation period anyway.
These are the type of stocks that we try to sift out and the ones that we like to sell ongoing premium against.
Maybe some of the people listening could benefit by just some kind of an example of a variety of, say, put writing strategies that you would be looking at in your menu.
Okay. So for instance, and this is something a lot of our investors like to do this in their tax deferred or tax free accounts. So what does that mean? That means that you're looking to do cash trades, right? Margin trades are not usually, in fact, they're not something that you're going to be doing in any of your RRSPs if you're in Canada, or IRAs if you're in the States. So let's quickly just review for folks when we're talking talking about options. When you do a covered put, you're going to be starting out by shorting an underlying symbol, right? Because then when you write the put later, that means that you now have an obligation to take on the symbol at the strike price anytime between now and expiration if you're dealing with the American option. And when you take on that symbol, you're then going to fulfill the whole loop by then returning that to the broker who you shorted the original position from. So with that said, the actual covered put portion of the trade is not a margin trade, but the initial writing the underlying symbol or shorting the underlying symbol so you can write a put against it is a margin trade. So what do we do? We teach people to then substitute that back month option, substitute that underlying symbol, that shorted underlying symbol with a back month option. So here's something that people can write down and put into their notes. If you want to find that symbol to create that diagonal, to create that cash trade, remember that if we go deep enough in the money with a put, that is, we call it trading at parity. If we go deep enough in the money, we can get a put option to move dollar for dollar, but inverted to what the shorted symbol would do. In other words, I can short a symbol or I can go long a deep in the money put option. So if you're trying to create these cash trades, but still get the neat sort of construction or the benefits of having a covered put where you get exercised not to the top side, but to the downside, then perhaps we want to substitute that back month option, substituting that shorted underlying symbol with buying a deep in the money put option. Now you might say, well, how far out should I go with that deep in the money put option? I know that when I sell premium, I want to sell at the money, you know, because that's got the most premium, and I want to sell near term because near term, you know, decays in price exponentially. So what do I want to do when I'm picking that back month option? Well, we know we want to go deep in the money, but how far out in time? Our program, when we watch our actually coached clients, they're staying in these positions 5 months on average. Now that bell curve, because we've been charting it for our clients, is very flat. Some clients stay in only 3 months. Other clients, equal enough number, stay in 8 or 9 months. So we want to have a back month symbol that's not going to expire and basically stop the premium gathering that we do every cycle. And if you're doing weekly options, that's just more premiums. But if you're doing monthly options, we're talking about 8 months worth of options. So you want to go far enough out in time, and you also want to find the liquidity. So a lot of the times we're just going right for that 2021 leap. So it's the leap. So it tends to get those people who are interested in those long-term plays. It has the liquidity, and you want to go deep in the money on that 2021 leap. And now you're going to have plenty of time so that the way that you wind up getting pulled out of these trades is either being by exercise or if you get bailed out to the downside, but that's many months down the line. So that's just a little strategy that we like to employ to take those covered puts and convert them into a cash trade. You're basically creating a bear put diagonal debit spread, but it's a very special one where it's not just willy-nilly picking the exercise and expiration dates, strike prices and expiration dates, but you're actually looking for that back month put option to be far out in time and deep in the money.
Now, when you talk about covered puts, you're talking about that the person would have the cash in their account in case they were put whatever they've written a put on, right?
Yeah. So with that's the margin requirement, right?
Yeah, well, you know, like I say, yeah, and if you wrote $10,000 worth of stock and you had $10,000 in your account, you obviously have a situation where you have the money in case you're put
correct.
The stock.
Yeah. Correct.
But so when you said, one thing I was concerned about though is when you're saying, because I was a little confused, so I'm thinking maybe somebody else is.
Sorry about that.
With regards to deep in the money writing, are you saying, and going out in time, are you saying that if a stock was, say, just to use a number 40, mm-hmm. that you would sell like a 50 put and go out 6 months?
No, I apologize. So I'm still going to always, when it comes to writing, which is selling to open, I'm mm-hmm. still going to be selling to open the near term at the money put.
Okay.
What I was talking about was substituting that shorted underlying symbol
right.
with a deep in the money, far out in time put option.
And so in the example of a stock being at 40 and then you sold something around the 40 level short term,
right.
what would be the corresponding strike on that 6 month one you're talking about?
So what we like to do is we like to, you can use the Greeks with the delta, but we also like to just look at how much premium is in there.
Yeah.
And so what we'll do is we'll evaluate and look for how deep in the money we can go to get premium less than about 5% of the overall option price. Mm-hmm. So say for instance, and I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but say we would probably go for like a $70 or even a $75 strike price out in January 2021. So we would go long that option.
I see.
The 2021 $75 put. Mm-hmm. And then after we've gone long that option, we would then sell the $40 near-term put.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's a strategy I've not been aware of. So it's something worth investigating to see if it would be appropriate. Obviously, no strategy is appropriate for every circumstance, but no. Under certain circumstances, you know, that might be an interesting thing.
What's nice about that is you're now going long, you know, buying to open versus selling to open. Mm-hmm. That back month, January 2021, $75 strike option, that's a cash trade. Mm. Because that back month, deep in the money option, the put option specifically, it's analogous to shorting the underlying symbol.
Yeah, no, and when you're long a put, you definitely have a sell position at the strike price.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a nice little substitute for us to get the same sort of dynamics of what a covered put would do for us, mm-hmm. right? A lot of people, especially right now, who think that the market bottom is going to fall out along with all the underlying symbols are using a lot of covered puts because the covered puts.
Yeah, well, that would be the environment where this would make a heck of a lot of sense.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The covered put will profit big time to the downside. Mm-hmm. But they don't have the margin account to do it. So this mm-hmm. is a way to do that, right?
Yeah. But, you know, the converse of that is if the market goes through the roof, that would not be one of the better trades to be in.
No, not. Yeah.
So are you looking mostly at individual stocks like this, or do you really focus in also on the like E-mini or something like that?
I don't focus so much on the E-mini. I'm looking at individual stocks or the exchange traded funds that kind of match the various sectors.
And on the ETFs, is there some companies, ETFs that you do more trading in than others?
Honestly, no. We look at, for instance, we were doing a lot on the transportations about a mm-hmm. year ago, but my personal philosophy, and I know that a lot of my students like the ETFs mainly because of that they feel it's a little bit more calm. It's almost like a moving average for all the other symbols. But my counter argument to that is the ETFs are going to be moving more based on, if you will, the emotion around that particular sector. Whereas the individual stocks, at least I've got some sort of measurement of the company's success. I can look at, like you mentioned, the PE ratio. I can look at when earnings dates are coming. I've got a little bit more measurements and ways to understand what the individual stocks are doing versus the ETF.
I was also looking at something like the Russell Index. Do you do anything with that, IWM?
I don't know.
Yeah, because I was looking at the chart and it's similar to the Chevron in that it's been range bound with volatility, trading between 160 and 145 most of the year. But it's been hitting both the sides of the window, which means obviously you've had some movement, which would probably give you some kind of volatility. But at the end of the day, still in that same kind of thing that you were talking about where it stays in a range kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what we like for. We look for those characteristics.
It with regards to when somebody is going with you guys, do you kind of tailor your education around their dollar figure that they're working with?
Well, that comes more down to, you know, what sort of underlying symbol price, or if you're substituting in those back month options, where that's going to fall. We have, for instance, for folks with very small portfolios, they might be focusing on symbols like Ericsson, ERIC, or GE. As you start to get the bigger portfolios, you might go up in price on your underlying symbol as to where you might focus. What's nice about it all, though, is that, you know, no matter where you fall, you're still going to do the same sort of position sizing calculation, right? You're going to determine what the trade risk is in the worst case scenario. You're going to then turn it back to what is your max allowable risk per trade to your portfolio. We usually recommend no more than 4%. That means that any one trade can't hit your portfolio by any more than 4%. And so if you think about it, the max allowable risk to your portfolio is equal to the amount of portfolio you invest in the trade times that particular trade risk. So for instance, if you have a 4% max allowable risk to your portfolio and you determined that the worst case scenario for the position you're going to be in is 12%, 12% times whatever percent of your portfolio you should put into this position should equal 4%. Or you can take the 4% using a little bit of algebra. And I'm not sure how many people are following along since we don't have sharing of screens. So just imagine 4% divided by 12%, which basically means you could put about a third of your portfolio into that position. So again, it all comes down down to not only can you afford it, but also making sure that no matter what the size of your portfolio, whether it's $800 or up to seven or eight figures, that you never go farther than, you know, what the risk will allow. What I've, you know, this is one way, and I'm sure you've got a similar set of stories, but one way where you can pinpoint people who are successful at trading versus people who have been trying to do trading for years, but never been quite successful is when they come to you and they start talking about the rewards versus the risks, right? You always know somebody has been successful at doing tradings because you watch them and they measure their risk per trade and they're not worried about the rewards. Rather, they're managing the risk per trade and they don't count their rewards until the position is closed and they're, you know, doing their accounting at the end of the cycle. Whereas folks that tend to not be successful in the long run are always looking at the reward component. Oh, I could make 38% on this trade, you know, versus managing the risk of going into the trade. So
I can definitely see why you'd use the GE on smaller accounts versus the Chevron as an example, because obviously an $8 stock is a heck of a lot less leverage than 120.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as far as trading is concerned, I mean, I live in Las Vegas and obviously there's many games of chance. The people who can do games with risk in it and stay the longest seem to be obviously the ones who manage their bankroll. And
correct.
Managing their bankroll in the investment arena means that your trades will have parameters on them that you hope, you know, that will not put you in an exposure. But, you know, sometimes there can be a force majeure type thing that, you know, that changes everything, but sometimes there's not. Credit spreads, credit put spreads and credit call spreads, are they things that you work with quite a bit?
Absolutely.
And, you know, like on the S&P 500, you know, we've had some pretty good support at 2,800 and 2,700 for many, many months now. So some people might be taking advantage of the puts that have strike prices underneath those levels to try to create some strategies, correct?
Correct.
Have you looked into that a little bit or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We would probably be trading it on the spiders, the SPY.
Okay.
And looking at, for instance, and again, the time to have really, we focus a lot on determining when we find tops and bottoms in these channels. Mm-hmm. And the time to have gotten into the, for instance, those 280, 285 spreads or 275, 280 spreads would have been after we had found the bottom, right? Maybe when I'm looking at the chart right now, maybe October 9th, October 10th, depending on how you determine your tops or bottoms, would have been the perfect time to place those trades. Right now, again, we haven't formed ourselves a full-on top, but when we do form our top, that would be a perfect time to start doing your credit spreads to the top side, maybe a 310, 315. You know, that's the ideal time because now you're taking advantage of that underlying symbol price difference.
Yeah, sometimes people combine technicals with their directional trades, like on the S&P right now. I think the 50-day average is in the 2900s and the 200-day average is in the 2800s. Mm-hmm. So you're inverted to the upside. So you might say to yourself, you believe the primary trend is still up, and then, you know, use those strike prices and the market's turning points down at 270 and 280 as your parameters and try to set up a strategy along that.
Correct.
Yeah, because like I say, we're sitting, and you were saying, we're sitting right near the highs here and the VIX is right at 14. It has had kind of an inability to stay under 14 for any length of time. And the S&P has had a difficult time staying above 3,000 for any length of time. So that old thing, something's got to give, is probably not a bad way of describing our current status.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I know that you do pretty good, AJ, is you talk about the psychological part of trading because, you know, like some people say, you can be your own worst enemy when you're managing your money.
Uh-huh.
And so you want to just expand a little bit on the psychological side when you go to tradingtrainer.com, because we know psychological is a big part of this thing.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things that I like to do is minimize the amount of white knuckling that we do in between our transactions. One of the things, and this just might show how long I've been doing it. When I was in my late 20s, early 30s, I didn't mind it as much as I do now. But one of the things I just don't like is having the session end, 4 o'clock Eastern time, and me being concerned about what's going to happen the next morning, because that can ruin my night's sleep. That can ruin all kinds of things. How I treat my friends and family for the next 6 hours at dinner time, so on and so forth. So, just to emphasize just the importance of this is I've seen portfolios, including my own, go up and down over the years. But one thing, and so my point is you can get your money back through investing just as easy as you can lose it. What I find you can't do is if you spend any amount of time wasted and or any amount of time not fully present with what's important in your life, you're not getting that back, right? So coming back to some of the strategies I like to do, I like to evaluate, especially these investor type strategies, premium selling strategies. You can do the evaluations of those in the evenings. So right then you get rid of, and I used to, when you go to Vegas now, you don't hear the coins dropping anymore. They don't have coins, but it used to be when you go to the casinos, you'd hear the and then you hear chink, 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 chink all over the place. And that had a really crazy effect on me personally. I'd start grabbing for my wallet. I'd start thinking, I gotta start, fear of missing out. I gotta start, playing this game. I'm gonna be missing out of those coins dropping. That happens to people, and I've seen it when I look over their shoulders when they're in the middle of the trading session. They'll start to make all sorts of emotional decisions based on a lot of fear of missing out. Am I gonna miss out on this position if I don't get into it right now? I prefer coming in at the evening, analyzing what happened during the previous day, deciding whether or not I need to take action the next day. And so that, again, based on what we were talking about earlier, I'm looking for tops and bottoms. And if I see a top or a bottom that formed the day, I assume I'm in the evening now, that happened earlier in the day, then I'm going to prepare some strategies, some black and white, easy to follow rules for if I'm going to enter a position tomorrow or not. And I honestly used to employ other people to do the actual trading because they don't care about your portfolio, not as much as you do. So you just give them black and white rules, wait until the first hour of trading is over. Make sure that the price of the symbol is below the price of what it closed at yesterday. Make sure the price of the symbol is below what it opened at, right? If there's any sort of gapping, whatever black and white rules that I always say the litmus test is, can somebody who's 10 years old with a fourth grade education determine or be able to understand your rules that you give them, just to make sure that the symbol is going in the direction you expected it to go as of last night when you did your analysis. And that's one of the number one things that I incorporate is I'm not in there during the trading session. I'm not going to be affected by watching those bid and ask prices move around. I'm going to be setting up some clear rules. And now, as of about 5 years ago, all of these different platforms now offer conditional trading, which allows you to no longer have to actually have a real person, but you can, depending on the platform you use, program in all sorts of cool little conditional trading rules. And at the end of the next day, I come, and if the position hasn't been filled, then I know that my rules weren't met. Whereas if all of my rules were met, then I'll come back at the end of the next day and I'll see that I've opened a position. And that's kind of how I do these premium selling positions. I allow my rules that I create after I see a certain pattern end of day for my rules. And that keeps me very, very disciplined and very, very emotionally pulled out of the whole up and down that can happen during a trade. What kind of rules do you use? What kind of, strategies do you use? I'm interested in that.
Well, like I say, I'm a believer in the moving averages, mm-hmm. and I'm a believer in the broad-based indexes, and I'm a believer in the credit spreads and taking advantage of the premium. Mm-hmm. And if you can have the limited risk of doing it, that gives you some peace of mind. Also, being patient and wait for what I would consider a high probability situation. And, if you're not that sure of it, then stay out, because staying out is much more comfortable than being into something you're not. And then you have to watch the leverage so that no one position could cause you too much harm, because, I've been around for a long time. And I would say that, having leverage and an unprecedented suggested move are the two biggest Achilles heels with trading. Obviously, overtrading and just becoming addicted to it is obviously one. But another one is patient traders could also have a problem if they don't have good parameters on exiting, or if the leverage with an unprecedented move that would come along would cause a significant amount of damage. The credit spreads obviously eliminate that quite a bit.
Yes.
So, you know, in other words, if you have a credit spread, the difference between the two strikes less your net premium is your risk. So even if, you know, they start bombing downtown Baltimore, you know, you have something, you have something in there. You know, I mean, the older you get, the less interest you have on anxiety.
Yes.
And, but I would encourage younger people to not want much to do with anxiety either.
And I think just based into the DNA of millennials, I think that's the case as well.
Yeah, I you know, I think this millennial generation is much more risk averse in my view.
I see that as well.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's because obviously the ability to make the money is not quite as prevalent, because with automation, you know, a lot of jobs aren't there anymore, and a lot of high paying jobs aren't there, because, you know, all this 3.5% unemployment sounds great, but how much of these people are making any money?
Exactly. And on top of that, that 3% is only on what, like 63% of the population. The other...
That's the participation rate?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've been around long enough to, you know, to look through some of these numbers as well. So anyway, and things can change very dramatically. A year ago in December, the whole world was saying that the Fed was going to be doing only hiking this year, and they did the direct opposite. They cut interest rates by over 50%.
That's right.
Now everyone is looking for a recession next year and rates to go to zero. And maybe it's time to look at the other side of that thing as well, because, you know, positioning is a big thing. And when everyone is already into something, things have to go very well in that direction to keep them going.
Exactly.
And so if everyone has been bearish and everyone's been selling and selling and selling, you know, things have to keep going in that direction. A good case in point right now might be FedEx, where the stock dropped all the way down, I think 120 or something like that. Just give you an example, because their news was bad, right? So, you know, Tom, Dick and Harry and everybody else is negative on FedEx, and, you know, the world's coming to an end on FedEx, and, you know, stock used to be 240 and the thing goes down to, I think it's about 120 and, well, 137 this year. But, you know, and now it's at 152. And, you know, the thing is that not everything can keep going in one direction forever. So, yeah, I mean, my thing is to try to find transactions I can sleep with, and then put on strategies that, you know, have parameters on it. And then, like you were saying, make sure that the risk on any one transaction is not going to be
breaking the bank.
Yeah, turning your boat into the Titanic, you know. That's why Trading Trainer, you know, obviously I'm not patronizing here. I think there's some value in getting some training and some psychological, you know, training, and also, you know, some systematic training and risk management training. And then, you know, you have a foundation of which to try to build your house.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's,
you know, and the thing about it is, AJ, is, you know, some people might say, oh, tradingtrainer.com must be all newbies. And, you know, I never forget this. John Elway was in the Super Bowl in 1998, and he'd already been in the league for 15 years. And I saw Mike Shanahan, the coach, they put his thing, and he's yelling at Elway, plant your feet, John. Now, who would ever think that, you know, after 17 years and all of those touchdown passes and all the Stanford and all the all pros, you'd have to remind John Elway to plant his feet. You know, it's a pretty standard thing for a quarterback before he throws to plant his feet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my analogy here is that, you know, it's not just newbies who could use a little training. There's also guys who've been in there a medium amount of time, and maybe even a longer amount of time, who maybe developed certain habits that have been detrimental to themselves, and maybe going to a trading trainer and kind of wiping the chalkboard off and starting a new chalkboard would not only be refreshing, but it also could be enlightening.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. At the end of all of our learning webinars, I started maybe 3 or 4 years ago asking these following three questions. One was, how many of you picked up something new this evening you didn't know before? And even some of my longest time tenure customers that keep staying on board with us might raise their hands periodically. The second question I ask is, whether you learned something new or not, how many of you got a better understanding of how to wrap your head around something? And I always get almost everybody, you know, 100, 120 people to raise their hands. And then the last question I always ask is, how many of you just had fun this evening, right? Mm-hmm. So I always like to ask that question just to make sure I'm getting the feedback I need to make my next session even better. But it is interesting that even folks that have been involved in investing 10, 15, 20 years, we've got a couple of 20-year veterans, still mm-hmm. say that they can learn something, wrap their head around it better.
Yeah, I think there's no question about it. And at the end of the day, people make their own decisions on their buys and sells. But the more knowledge you have, the more at ease you are, the more understanding you have of all the different alternatives, you know, that's a big key, is that you look at a thing you think is going to go up. Well, you know, what's the menu of all the tactics you could choose from, and mm-hmm. which one do you feel is most appropriate and most in line with your anxiety level, you know?
And that's one of the most important things you just put your finger on, which is being able to match that strategy to all those different variables, because it always burns my buns when I hear about somebody who's just teaching a course on, like, for instance, condors, because condor is just one of basically 27 different variation, 27 different strategies that you can apply. And maybe the condor doesn't work in all situations. Mm-hmm. So I definitely applaud what you're saying there.
Yeah. And also there's other factors that I'm sure you cover, which are liquidity issues. You know, you might mm-hmm. see a strategy that looks good, but if you went down to try to do 10 contracts on it, you know, you might not get filled, or the prices aren't really there except for like one contract. And then there could be markets where if you tried to get out of them, you know, because if you're dealing with a spread, you've got to buy one on the ask and sell one on the bid.
Right.
And so obviously, you know, if you can drive a Mack truck through the bid offers, it's not going to be a suitable instrument to do the strategy on. Mm-hmm. So there is quite a bit to learn on this. I was wondering now, since we're coming to the top of the hour, if you had anything that you wanted to offer as a special deal, and also, of course, reintroduce yourself to people so that remind them who you are, and of course, tradingtrainer.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, if you guys go to the tradingtrainer.com website, and you can see that on your screen right now, there's a image that's floating by. One of the images I'd love for you to float by on, it says, get my white papers. Now, I'm kind of a big nerdy nerd, right? And I'd love for you to have access to my white papers. And so find that image. Just go to that website, tradingtrainer.com. It'll just flash by on a timer, and you'll see the one that says, get my white papers. Go ahead and follow the instructions. You'll get free access to our students-only website, where we'll have the white papers for you to access. And then the other one that I'd love to give you a free bonus on is, if you go to askajonline.com, askajonline.com. I do these monthly calls where I will answer all the questions that come my way about trading. And if you ever come up with a question and you'd like to have somebody address it, join me for one of my Ask AJ Online calls, askajonline.com. And I do these monthly just for the public, just to make sure I dispel any sort of confusion out there about trading questions. So those are the two things. If you'd like to check out some of our products, I've got one that I've been talking about, which is tailored towards investors. I'd love for you to check that out. That's at optioninvesting.org, optioninvesting.org/IIC. That's my program for investors, optioninvesting.org/IIC. Jim, I really appreciate you hosting today for us. That was a great discussion.
And I thought it was a good opportunity for people to become a lot more aware of what you're doing, and so they would be more encouraged to pursue and look into it, which I think is a good idea. To close out, thank you, AJ, very much for being here. I'm Jim Kenny, and if you'd like to know what I'm thinking, what I'm looking at, and ask questions on anything, every week I come out with a opinion and observation sheet on everything from the stock market to the bond market, crude oil, gold, and the currency. And obviously that's a lot. So we do that every week. And to be aware of that, you simply go to optionprofessor@gmail.com and let me know you're interested, and I'll be more than happy to hook you up with that every week. Again, AJ, great discussion today, and it's the top of the hour, so our timing is excellent. excellent. We're going to turn it back over to David and thank everybody for being with us today.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great discussion. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast network to get instant updates on future shows. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to the recording of this show as soon as it's available and any of the past shows and reports there. Be sure to join us for Analyze Your Trade tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. That'll be the 99th episode. And Mike Bassani and Brian Klindworth and Jim will be on that one. So you can go to timingresearch.com/live. Live to get access to live access to any of the shows. And I just want to thank my guests again for today. AJ Brown of TradingTrainer.com. Great to have you with us again.
Thank you.
And Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Jim.